Good evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. After a highly anticipated court ruling last week, the City of Kingston is moving forward with the purchase of the property at 2000 Front Road, known to many as Lemoyne Point Farm. The acquisition follows a court-approved settlement reached after years of confidential negotiations related to the property. The city purchased the approximately 80-acre site for $12 million. Jim Biaggi, Chris Cannon, Sheila Mirsky, and Richard Rayburn Gibson of the Save Lemoyne Point Farm Group, a coalition of Kingston residents who have long advocated for the protection of the land, sat down with CFRC to share their history with the property and their thoughts on this latest development.
Jim Biaggi, and I'm with the Save Lemoyne Point Farm Group, which I've been with since its inception.
So I'm Chris Cannon, and there were seven of us who got together right after Mary Fraser died, realizing that the Lemoyne Point Farm might be under pressure of development, and we formed the Save Lemoyne Point Farm Group and have since evolved. But Sheila and I had a long history back 35, 36 years ago of back when Lemoyne Point Farm was in Kingston Township. There was pressure to develop 22, 23 acres corner of the farm and build houses and extend sewers, et cetera, et cetera. And we long fought that. Sheila was the head of our Protect Lemoyne Point organization that formed. And I should turn it over to Sheila, but just to say that we would attract 500 people at public meetings in township offices to protect Lemoyne Point from this development.
Hi, I'm Sheila Mirsky, yes. So I was one of many people who have been involved with trying to protect Lemoyne Point Farm for, 36 years. It was really heartwarming to see how much the community wanted that land protected. I mean, back before the internet and before email and all that technology, we were able to get together a petition with 6,000 signatures to present to the then Township Council of Kingston. And we influenced a municipal election result, actually, to keep that development from occurring way back then. So it was a long-standing desire of the community to see that land not turn into a subdivision and to have it remain natural. And ultimately, we were hoping that there could be a public purchase.
Almost an original member of the group, been with them since that same period of time, 2022. And as you know from our website and your previous research, our goal to conserve the field, forest, and shoreline of Lemoyne Point Farm for future generations. The group that Chris mentioned and others have mentioned that it includes seven people is a really spectacular group of talented people that have been doing advocacy work to protect this property.
Thank you all for that background. And again, there's a long history here. After all these years of discussion and advocacy, what does this ruling feel like?
Well, we really think it is good news, and we applaud the city for their persistence in negotiating this purchase of the farm. They've been involved in this for quite some time, and we've been in contact with them. With the politicians, the mayor's office, councilors, senior staff, legal department, for a couple of years as these negotiations have been underway. So it is a remarkable and important milestone that they have finalized the negotiation of this process through the hearing process and so on. And it's an important investment in one of the few remaining natural spaces within the urban boundary of Kingston. And Chris has already talked about how this is, so important and terms of preserving this special place, this jewel on Lake Ontario. We're pleased with this this step, but you know, we're going to be vigilant in the future to make sure that, you know, our objectives and our objectives in terms of the local and regional community are met.
I'll just echo Richard, and we've worked long and hard, and me and Sheila for 36 years to make sure that it remained an open natural space with public access, and this is a step towards that.
Really, really over the moon that this purchase has happened, and we can now work positively with the community and the city to see that it's properly protected in the long term.
Looking ahead, according to a statement released by the city, the land will remain open to the public and protected while long-term plans are developed with community input. More detailed information is expected to be included in a council report scheduled for March 24, 2026. The Save Le Moyne Point Farm Group says they plan to continue their advocacy and remain vigilant to ensure the farm's long-term protection.
Yeah, I think we're most concerned about what the process will be to ensure that this this property does remain protected in the long term. As you know, councils change every 4 years, and the future council could easily decide to rezone and sell off part of that property. So that's why I think Richard mentioned that we need to remain engaged and vigilant. But I'm confident that the community is so much in favor of having that remain natural space that I don't think that there's going to be that will ever happen. But we want to not have to remain on guard all the time and see if we can put in place something that will ensure that that could not happen.
Just one more layer on that as well is that Mary Fraser, who was the owner of the farm at the time she died, had long wanted the farm to be public space and not be developed, and had those expressed as wishes in her last will and testament. So I feel we're honoring Mary's wishes as well if we are endeavoring to keep it a natural space and keep it on a farm and the forests from development.
And moving forward, what kinds of safeguards are you maybe hoping get put in place? Like you guys said, we're almost at the end of this council term. There's going to be lots of changeover in the future. What are some of the measures that you think should be put in place to keep this space safe?
You know, we have looked at legal techniques in the past. One scenario that we've looked at was conservation easements, and this is where you put a registered on title document on file that limits future use, and there could be specifications in that conservation easement. As Sheila says, local councils change, and you know, 10 years might sound like a long time, not to worry, but we're thinking about generations from now and having this place remain a natural area, and protected, these fields and these forests and this unique, very unique shoreline, not until 2040, but you know, beyond the turn of the century and so on. So to have a robust system in place that can be resilient against the puts and takes of politics and economics and everything else needs some protections in place that might be legal documents or other things.
And we must remember the indigenous practice of always looking 7 generations ahead as you plan. I hope we will continue to do that.
The city has also indicated it will pursue partnerships with organizations such as the Cataraqui Region Conservation Authority and other not-for-profit groups. In the city's statement, Mayor Brian Patterson said these partnerships will help ensure the property remains a welcoming and sustainable space, adding that the city looks forward to working with residents to imagine the future of Le Moyne Point Farm.
I think when we talk about how unique and magnificent this gem of a property is, I think the word imagine is really important. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity, a generational opportunity to save this property and dream and imagine about, you know, a future in which this type of property exists decades and longer from now. So I may be a little, maybe sounding a little altruistic here, but to encourage Kingstonians and others to imagine that that future is something I'd like to see out of the consultation.
Thanks, Richard. That's a very positive way of putting it, and I agree. And I, you know, we had a community meeting. When was that? 2 years ago, I guess, where there was a visioning exercise of how, you know, for people to imagine how the property might be used in public space, and that information's on our website. But I think for the city to undertake something like that, that would get people's minds churning about what might be done with the space would be wonderful.
As Kingston begins to imagine what comes next for the farm, the Save Lemoyne Point Farm Group says they will continue their work, also pointing to the importance of the upcoming municipal elections as a key moment for advocacy and accountability.
The broader agenda of vigilance and looking at approaches to ensure long-term preservation, but, you know, drilling down a little bit, it might be to participate in a consultation that might be happening on that the city runs. We will continue to be in contact with our broad base of supporters across Kingston and maybe seek additional advice from them. We are working with an organization called Small Change Fund, and through that have had the ability to receive charitable donations. So we have some funds, and if there's opportunities to hire subject matter experts or others to support the community's work on the future of the farm, we can do that. We'll certainly continue to be active with our newsletter and on social media, keeping people informed. And I think also, you know, we have met, as I said, with politicians and you know, senior staff at the city. We will continue to do that, make sure they're aware of our, continue to be aware of our vision for this property. And, you know, it won't be too many months before we might decide we want to pay attention to who's running for municipal council and mayor and see what they're saying about their agenda.
Just to add to what Richard said about reaching out to our local politicians with the elections expected in November and uncertainty around mayoral candidates. At the previous election cycle, we were quite successful reaching out to mayor and councillors from almost all of those people, getting commitments that the farm should be protected from development. So we are likely to be engaging in a campaign during the summer and fall to get commitments again from people running again for council and mayor's positions.
Council has unanimously approved $3 million in funding for the development of Tricolor Labs, a shared industry-ready wet lab and biomanufacturing facility planned for Botterill Hall at Queen's University. Ben McGillwam with Kingston Economic Development Corporation spoke to the demand for the facility and the benefit of having it in Kingston.
So the primary users of the lab are going to be fully funded commercializing stage life sciences companies looking for lab space, spinouts from the university and the college, and then other regional spinouts looking for BSL2 lab space, and scaling life science companies within the region looking for short-term leases anywhere from 10 weeks to over a year, and then foreign direct investments looking for lab space to enter the North American market, kind of hitting the ground running. Tricolor Labs, addresses a clear market demand across Ontario. There's a lack of wet lab space, especially the BSL2 for companies. And Kingston in particular has a severe lack of this space. The Tricolor Labs will integrate quite well with the Kingston ecosystem, the strengths that are Queen's University, the biotech program that's at St. Lawrence College, and the city's vision for a long-term health campus around a new hospital. This will be a feeder to that space. Kingston has a strong area of research and early stage innovation in the life sciences. We have programs like Dun & Desponsay's Queen's Innovation, a build-to-scale life science program where we see companies spinning out IP from the university into new businesses. Leveraging the research strengths that's at Queen's University and a lot of the equipment that is there that life science companies want.
Jesse Coobs with Economic Development at Queen's University also spoke before council to how Queen's is uniquely positioned to meet this demand for lab space.
Queen's University is uniquely positioned to host Tricolor Labs. It has established programs and offers entrepreneurial and IP support necessary for early stage companies. The campus has established BSL 1 and 2 wet lab infrastructure, specialized equipment, and full biosafety and waste management framework already in place. It also has state-of-the-art animal facilities that help bridge the preclinical gap that often exists for startups. And importantly, Queen leads numerous clinical trials locally and internationally, meaning companies have the ability to plug directly into clinical research pathways as well. The eighth floor of Botterell Hall provides an ideal foundation for Tricolor Labs footprint. It already contains existing BSL 1 and 2 wet lab space, autoclaves, fume hoods, waste systems, all connected by secure card access hallways. The vision is to update and modernize the existing space into flexible modular suites similar to smart labs style facilities that are in global innovation centers, enabling multiple firms to collate safely with direct access to Queen's core facilities. Second floor is another area that's been designated with an open concept layout, growth-friendly space, ideal for companies looking for collaborative and scalable workspace. Shared equipment that is essential that would be cost prohibitive for companies, but it allow companies to grow and collaborate.
McIlwain and Coobs were given another opportunity to highlight the university's unique positioning for this project when asked by council how much this project would cost without the existing infrastructure at Queen's.
So I think the ballpark of that would be around $1,500 a square foot. Just to renovate it was over $1,000 a square foot, plus the planning and permitting, and then finding the space that would fit the needs.
I'll just add quickly, to set up a biosafety level 2 building without the infrastructure would be millions and millions of dollars. The opportunity here is that we'll leverage existing infrastructure that is multi-million dollars of equipment and already established programs that we can leverage.
The funding is conditional on securing and maintaining additional government funding, finalizing governance and oversight structures, and executing formal funding and collaboration agreements between the City of Kingston, Kingston Economic Development Corporation, and Queen's University. The city's contribution will be limited to capital and equipment costs only, with no responsibility for operating, maintenance, or life cycle expenses. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Hello, you are listening to your Queen's Campus Beat here on CFRC 101.9 FM or online at cfrc.ca. Health authorities are alerting students and residents following a confirmed case of measles in the Kingston area. Southeast Public Health has identified 3 locations where potential exposure may have occurred between February 9th and February 13th, including Queen's University's Kingston Hall at 103 Stewart Street on Tuesday, February 10th, from 11:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Additional exposure sites were Good Life Fitness at 64 Barrack Street and the Metro Grocery Store at 310 Barry Street. Public health officials stress that measles is highly contagious and individuals exposed should check their vaccination records, monitor for symptoms like fever, rash, and conjunctivitis, and isolate if necessary. Additionally, seek medical attention. Students unsure of their immunization status are advised to consult health services or their healthcare provider promptly. On campus, Queen's Relay for Life is ramping up for its 20th anniversary fundraising campaign. The Relay, a 12-hour walkathon supporting the Canadian Cancer Society, is scheduled for March 20th in the Queen's Athletic and Recreation Center, the ARC. This year's organizers have an ambitious 170,000 fundraising goal, with more than 550 participants already registered, and over $65,000 already raised ahead of the event. Funds raised support cancer research and services for survivors and families in Kingston and beyond. Past events have involved hundreds of students, faculty, and community partners. In recent Queen's faculty, staff, and employee news, recent internal reporting from Queen's University shows that just over half of all employees, around 51%, participated in the university's latest employee experiences survey, conducted in early 2026. The survey, administered by the external research firm Metrics at Work, was designed to measure faculty and staff engagement across key areas such as communication, workplace clarity, recognition, and support for mental health. Principal Patrick Dean thanked the participants, noting the results will provide valuable information to help shape positive and productive organizational culture. Aggregated findings will be released in the coming months, with anonymized faculty-level results also shared to guide future planning. On a broader Kingston front, the 2026 Mayor's Innovation Challenge is inviting post-secondary students, including Queen's University attendees, to submit innovative project proposals that could improve the quality of life for Kingston residents. Submissions, in the form of a 2 to 3 minute video, are due by March 6th, with finalists pitching to a panel of municipal and entrepreneurship leaders on March 20th. Winners may receive up to $10,000 to develop their ideas, access to the Queen's Founders and Innovators Initiative, QFII, with seed funding potential, and compete further for larger prize pools. An information session was held on February 10th in Mitchell Hall Events Commons to guide prospective entrants. Also, in athletic news, Queen's University cheerleading captured the Collegiate National Championship at the Cheer Canada Nationals on February 23, 2026, the program's first national title in 18 years. The Gaels scored 82.3 out of 100 points in a tightly contested field. Three team members were also named to the national team, highlighting individual achievements alongside the team victory. I have been Henry Walker, bringing you your Queen's Campus Beat here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Thank you for listening.
This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Wednesday, February 25th, daytime high of 1 degree, but it will feel a little colder, dipping into the negative range. Overnight low of minus 9. Thursday, February 26th, daytime high of minus 1, and there is a 60% chance of precipitation, will vary between snow or rain depending on the time of day and the daytime high, overnight dropping down to minus 6. Friday, February 27th, daytime high of 3 degrees, dropping to 0 overnight, cloudy all day. Saturday, February 28th, warmest day of the week, daytime high of 5 degrees with cloudy conditions, dropping back down to minus 9 overnight. Sunday, March 1st, daytime high of minus 4 with a mix of sun and cloud. And then Monday, March 2nd, looks like we will have more winter weather in store. Daytime high of minus 8 with a 75% chance of snow flurries in the forecast. This is your City of Kingston traffic report. Just a reminder, overnight parking restrictions are in effect for the rest of February. Come March 1st, the overnight restrictions will loosen to where overnight parking is only banned when weather conditions require it, i.e. if there is snow or freezing rain in the forecast. Until March 1st, all overnight street parking is banned in the City of Kingston.
And now it's time for the CFRC Concert and Events Calendar. On Wednesday, check out Hollow Body at Hotel Wolf Island starting at 6:30, Youngblood at the Isabel at 7, or Juliana Riolino and Cassie Valazza at Broom Factory at 7:30. Or you can also have fun with friends at Board Games Night at Something in the Water at 5, Trivia at Daft Brewing at 7, or Karaoke at the Mansion at 9. On Thursday, events and screenings kick off for the Kingston Canadian Film Festival at Broom Factory, the Isabel, Kingston Grand Theatre, and the Screening Room. Visit KingCanFilmFest.com for details and ticket information. Show highlights for Thursday include Born Ruffians at Signal Brewery at 8 o'clock, Arkells at the Broom Factory at 8:30, and also Ben Hickling at Hotel Wolf Island at the same time. There's also a burlesque show at Daft Brewing on Thursday night as well at 8 o'clock, and trivia at Riverhead, Grad Club, Something in the Water, and Queen's Pub. On Friday, CFRC's own John McClurg plays Kirkpatrick starting at 5 o'clock, and the Kingston Baroque Consort is hosting a Bach, Vivaldi, and More concert at St. James Anglican at 5:15. Miss Emily takes the stage at the Cove Inn at 7 o'clock. Dominique Fils-Aimée is at the Isabel at 7:30, and July Talk with Born Ruffians at Grand Theatre is happening at 7:30. You can also check out The Ancient Shapes, Maud Lang, and local legend Mississippi Grover at the Toucan at 10:30. On Friday, you can also check out Trivia at Wild Wing at 7 o'clock, a burlesque show at the Royal Theatre in Gananoque at 8, or Karaoke at the Buckle and Daft Brewing kicking off at 9 o'clock. On Saturday, you can go see Abby Stewart at the Embassy at 7, the Big Fat Horn Band with Michael K. Myers and Debbie Feely at the RCHA at 8, Last Call, Dutch Baby, Naked by 9, and LNRK at the Mansion at 9, or Squid Pistol at the Merchant at 10 o'clock. Alongside more amazing Kingston Canadian Film Festival events and screenings you can check out via KingCanFilmFest.com, you can also enjoy the Love Sucks Alt-Rock Drag Show at Daft Brewing at 7:30 or My Kinky Valentine Burlesque Show at The Spire at 8. And on Sunday, Tob Savage and friends are playing a weekly gig at the Kingston Yacht Club at 2 p.m. The OG Blues Band is at Spearhead at 2, and you can certainly hit up the Kingston Canadian Film Festival screenings, while the Memorial Center Farmers Market starts at 9 o'clock in the morning, and some lovely snowshoeing opportunities are available at Little Cataraqui Conservation Area starting at 10 a.m. and for seniors at 1 p.m. Visit our concert and events calendars via CFRC.ca or check out daily posts via at CFRC Music for more concerts and events. Reach out through our website as well if you have a concert or event you'd like to share on our airwaves or through our platforms. That's a wrap for concerts and events. Back to the CFRC news team.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and the Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.